Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Tuesday, October 15th.
In Washington, the White House today rejected a proposal from House Republicans to extend the debt limit and reopen the federal government. New Mexico Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham.
I feel like there's more talk and more negotiations underway than there certainly were last week, where there was just this huge divide. In fact, the latest reports are that we don't have the Republican votes out of the Republican caucus on the House to move forward on any proposal to date. So Boehner's got some work to do today.
The Albuquerque Democrat referring there to House Speaker John Boehner. For its part, the White House objected to the House's proposed alterations to Obamacare. Congress must raise the debt limit by Thursday or risk default. Despite the lack of progress in Washington, there will be no furlough of 55 civilian state workers for the New Mexico National Guard. Governor Susana Martinez's administration is halting any such furlough by using state dollars to cover their salaries this week while the federal government shutdown continues. A National Guard spokesman says the state will pay more than $53,000 to cover the federal share of salaries. A coalition of Christian New Mexico opponents of same-sex marriage is ratcheting up its campaign in advance of the state Supreme Court's review of the state's marriage laws. An email from the Traditional Values Advocacy Committee is promoting an October 23rd rally at the Supreme Court building. It quotes former Lieutenant Governor Walter Bradley saying the judicial review is a blatant travesty. The High Court is expected that same day to address the assertion of some New Mexico County clerks that nothing in the Constitution prohibits marriage equality. Public policy and political watchdog Progress Now New Mexico says today it has filed a formal complaint with the IRS. The complaint alleges that New Mexico's Public Education Secretary-designate Hannah Scandera was among recipients of monies not properly disclosed by a nonprofit education advocacy group. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush's nonprofit, Foundation for Excellence in Education, is the entity in question. It often promotes the use of charter schools for states where public education performance is deemed poor. The organization allegedly paid some travel expenses for Scandera to testify before Congress in Washington, D.C. back in 2012. In an interview on CBS to promote his new book, former Governor Bill Richardson blames himself for his broken relationship with former President Bill Clinton. The New Mexican quotes Richardson saying he regretted inviting the former president to Santa Fe back in 2008 to view the Super Bowl with the former president, who was then seeking an endorsement from Richardson for his wife Hillary Clinton in that year's presidential race. Richardson, Clinton's energy secretary and UN ambassador, endorsed now President Barack Obama. 15,000 people are expected on Albuquerque's Civic Plaza for Sunday's Duke City Marathon. Races ranging from a 5-kilometer walk to the event's signature 26-plus miler are offered. Marathon spokesman Bert Tremblay says registrants come from all over.
We actually have 4 different countries at this point that are represented in the Duke City Marathon. We've got people coming as far as Norway and Australia. And they like to make that trek every year. We have people coming from 47 of the different states right now. We're working on the last 3 to complete all 50. So we do have hundreds of runners and walkers that come in from around the world and a lot from around the country to enjoy a week or a weekend in Albuquerque.
Tremblay says online registration at DukeCityMarathon.com is available through Friday. Last-minute registrants can sign up at Saturday's Fitness Expo at the Albuquerque Convention Center until 5 p.m. Weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny today with breezy conditions at times, high in the upper 50s. A small disturbance crosses our region this evening, bringing a 30% chance of precipitation, along with colder temperatures. Meteorologist Todd Shoemake with the National Weather Service says higher elevation snow is possible.
The snow levels will be fluctuating generally between about 7,000 to 8,000 feet tonight, so some of the peaks of the Sangre de Cristos may be a little bit light as people wake up Wednesday morning with a few inches of snow.
It'll be mostly cloudy Wednesday with showers still possible and a high only in the mid-40s. I'm Tom Tropridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And At Noon on KSFR will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
12 minutes past the hour, as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. Just before we went to air today, we heard from Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, U.S. House Representative for New Mexico's 1st Congressional District. Eyes across the nation and the world are on Washington, D.C., where there's yet no clear-cut path to averting a first-ever U.S. default on debt just 36 hours from now. KSFR's Charles Maynard asked Lujan Grisham about activities in D.C. today. Here now is Charles' interview.
Congresswoman Lujan Grisham, first question, are things still getting done in Washington?
Well, we've introduced actually, we're getting ready to drop a bill, even though the House has stalled on veterans benefits and trying to get my other bills out of some of the committee work. So, yes, work is continuing. In addition to that, if you've watched any of the news, each of our caucuses in the Senate and the House have all met, and there are at least written details of proposals to reopen the government and to avert an economic catastrophe by not paying our bills and defaulting because we don't raise the debt ceiling. I'm optimistic that some component of that will meet the needs of the GOP caucus in the House so that we can get a full vote. We've only got 35 hours left before we would reach the situation where we would default on our obligations as a nation. So I feel like there's more talk and more negotiations underway than there certainly were last week, where there was just this huge divide. But we're not there yet, Charles. And in fact, the latest reports are that we don't have the Republican votes out of the Republican caucus on the House to move forward on any proposal to date. So Boehner's got some work to do today.
There are a number of businesses and organizations that are stepping up to help those who have been furloughed. Tell us a bit about them.
I went to the business community, the financial community, the utilities, telecommunications, and, really nobody said no. Everybody's willing to create an environment where if you're a federal furloughed employee, the financial institutions, community banks, some of the bigger banks like Wells Fargo, and Bank of America, also the community banks, are offering interest-free loans. Now, not everyone's doing the same thing, so I'm just going to kind of generically give you a sense about interest-free loans. You can miss a payment on a loan with them. They're looking for ways to make sure that there's no poor credit reporting, because if you're a labs employee, if you've got a credit bureau issue, you could lose your security clearance. They're going to work with you on your mortgages. And the same is true for all of the utility companies. They're going to do payment arrangements, whatever tools they're allowed to provide, they'll provide to help people bridge the gaps because their paychecks are going to be smaller. YMCA is offering child care and free memberships and all kinds of support. And I just heard from Del Norte Credit Union. They just contacted us today, and they want to be part of this group. And now we're going to ask these same partners to see if they would help our defense contractors who don't get their contracts reinstated necessarily and don't get back pay for lost wages as a result of having a contract stalled, but are in the same financial situation as our furloughed employees. So I'm going to go back to these groups and ask them to help anyone who's affected by this turn of events.
Do you have any time estimate at this point on when we might get this shutdown reversed and get things going again?
As someone who wants a vote, I prefer today, and so does the Senate, I'd like to vote on a single measure as quickly as we can, well before the 35th hour deadline, on something that opens up the government immediately, something that addresses the debt ceiling limit crisis. I'm happy to vote for something that takes us through the end of December or the first part of January or even into February that allows us enough time to solve these problems over the long haul, not just crisis management. I'm also, however, that realistically, that if we can't get the Republican caucus to allow a vote on both those measures at the same time. It's just very simple, very clean. And I'm also prepared to vote on just addressing the debt ceiling if we get there. Now, I can tell you that there are members like me who worry that if you separate them, it'll take too long to reopen the government, and that's a disaster for New Mexico. But I think defaulting on our debts in this nation is the worst thing we could ever do, and I'm just not willing to get that close. So the best-case scenario is maybe this evening we get to vote on opening the government and the debt ceiling problem, pass measures that buy us 2 or 3 months, and then go to a conference on both those issues and get them addressed over the long haul. The next case scenario is within a day or so, we're looking at proposals that have some other issues in them that might have, say, a 2-year delay of the medical device tax as part of the Affordable Care Act, as an example. And the worst case scenario is we can't reach agreements and we just deal with the debt ceiling, you know, at the 11th hour before the 17th. I think those are the three sort of likely aspects, and I'm hopeful for the first one, of course, and I'll be working with my Republican members across the aisle to encourage them to allow us a clean vote on both and to go to conference for the bigger negotiated item.
Congresswoman Michelle Lujan Grisham, thank you so much for joining us.
That was KSFR's Charles Maynard speaking with the Congresswoman. At Noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from Mountain Cloud Zen Center in Santa Fe, where there's no need to don robes or shave heads. The miracle of everyday life. That's where real awakening happens, in the midst of ordinary lives. A taste of the deep, clear peace of authentic Zen can be found at Mountain Cloud Zen Center. Thursday night talks and Sunday morning practice with resident Zen teacher Henry Shookman. Everyone always welcome. Learn more at mountaincloud.org.
And continuing now with today's feature items, in spite of the current partial shutdown of the federal government, the first phase of the nation's Affordable Care Act has become a reality. Perhaps not unexpectedly, with the rollout of any new large program, there have been a number of glitches and frustrations with the sign-up process. Here to discuss those problems is Maria Perez with Health Action New Mexico. Maria, how is the system working now here in New Mexico?
Keep in mind that this is the biggest overhaul to health law, the biggest effort towards health reform that we've had since the mid-60s. It's a tremendous project, and there are some kinks that we're experiencing for sure. It's not flowing as smoothly as we were hoping that it would be flowing, but there's a lot of people keeping their eyes on the system, you know, attempting to bring solutions to the problems that we're encountering. So it's not flowing super smoothly, but we're making the best of it, and we're pushing forward.
What are some of the bigger complaints about the system?
The biggest complaint that I hear being on the ground trying to, you know, facilitate people's enrollment process is that the IT system is just not working barely at all. So when people want to sign up online, it is just not happening. The website for the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange has just crashed. Basically, all the time, I hear that you can get on it, you know, like at 2 o'clock in the morning or something when there's just no traffic on it. But if it's, you know, regular human hours, the website just doesn't have the capacity for some reason to handle the traffic. So it crashes a lot. Remember that the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange, the marketplace, is a joint state and federal program right now. So a lot of it has to do with, like, federal IT, which the state has nothing, you know, no power over fixing it.
And are there other major complaints?
Another major complaint, and I have experienced this personally, is that as far as particularly Medicaid expansion, but for both programs, the state has been saying that people should go to their income support division office in their local area. And, you know, every community has one of these. So that seemed to be like a hopeful thing that the government was thinking, okay, where can people go in their community to sign up? Now, people from my organization have been checking out what the state of preparedness is in different income support division offices throughout the state, and it is just totally random. Some offices are more prepared. Some offices are completely unprepared. The office here in Santa Fe, I went there on the day that this opened on October 1st, and they were basically turning people away. They didn't know what was happening. They were telling people that they don't do Obamacare there. Like, it was a mess. Some other offices in the state are doing better, but that's a frustration because, you know, people spend a lot of time traveling. For example, when I went to the office in Santa Fe on October 1st, there was a gentleman that traveled from Pecos without transportation. Like, he figured out a way to get to the Santa Fe office, and he just got turned away at the door, you know. So that was a big frustration for him. He'd been without insurance for over 5 years. So he was very excited, you know, like he was like, okay, this is something that's going to help me and my family. I'm going to go do it on the day that it opens. And he just had to basically hitch a ride back home with nothing.
Are you optimistic about the process seeing some improvement soon?
The process is a little clunky. It's slow moving, but it is moving. I know that there's been at least 300 small businesses that have been enrolled with the marketplace. I know that people are being able to turn in their applications, and these are being processed. I know that there's healthcare guides that have been trained to enroll people, and they are working. They are enrolling people. It's just, you know, it's going to take a little while to really address the issues as they come up. But I want to make sure that I mention this. There is a great team of people and organizations that are there to help people out when they encounter barriers, including Health Action New Mexico, including the Southwest Women's Law Center, and including the New Mexico Center of Law and Poverty. We're hoping that people will give us a call and explain to us what barriers they have run into, and we will personally follow up on that as per individual. So I want to make sure that people know that they're not alone, that there's people out here that are trying to get this going, that are advocating for you personally, and don't give up. We're going to get this done. I have been accused of being an optimist in the past, but I do believe that this is amazing. Like I said, it's a monumental effort. It's going to take a lot of civic engagement. Anybody who believes in health reform, who believes that people deserve access to health and healthcare, needs to become involved in some way. We need to push this forward. It's going to take civilian effort, civic effort to get this forward, and this is what I do as my work, but everybody needs to pitch in however way they can, because we need to move this forward. It's amazing. It's going to change the health outcomes of our whole country. It's going to change the way that we function. We're the only industrialized country without access to health care for the people.
And you'll be speaking in Santa Fe on this issue tomorrow night, correct?
Yes, so this is happening at the Center for Peace and Justice on Cerrillos Road. It's starting at 6 o'clock, I think. And I will be giving a presentation there to the members of the Democratic Party, and I think it's open to the community. I'm going to be, in simple, straightforward terms, talking about ACA, Obamacare in general, what it is, and also talking about Medicaid expansion and the health insurance marketplace, what the difference is, how people qualify, and how do they go about enrolling in this. So it's going to be a very informative, very simple terms presentation, and there will be plenty of time for questions and answers so that people, because I can speak of what I think people need to know, but people have their own questions, so we'll make sure to leave time for that too. So if you have any questions, if you have any concerns about this, if you don't know how to go about it, please come. I think you'll get a lot out of it.
Does your organization have a website?
Yes, it does. It's www.healthactionnm.org. So www.healthactionnm.org. And there's a ton of information there, and it's bilingual.
And anything else you'd like us to know?
I think people need to know that there's about 350,000 New Mexicans who will get coverage through this program. A lot of them for the first time in their lives, a lot of them for the first time in generations. This is huge. It's an amazing, amazing opportunity. And we, you know, people get bogged down by the government shutdown and other diversionary tactics that people who are against this are trying to put out there. But the point of this is much bigger than that. This is much bigger than politics, is much bigger than any of us. This is a fundamental change in the way that we do business in this country, in this state. We can get it done, and it would be amazing for the better of the state forever.
Maria Perez of Health Action New Mexico, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
Support comes from Lannan Foundation, presenting a reading and conversation with Jamaica Kincaid on Wednesday, October 16th, 7 p.m. at the Linsick. Novelist and short story writer Jamaica Kincaid's books include Lucy and Annie John. Her recent See Now Then chronicles of the death of a marriage like a beautiful elegy. Kincaid, whose work has been called loosely autobiographical, has said, "Everything I say is true and everything I say is not true." Tickets at the Linsick or TicketSantaFe.com.
26 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. One of the original Mercury astronauts, Scott Carpenter, has passed away. The 88-year-old astronaut died last week of complications from a recent stroke. Joining us now to talk about the life and career of Carpenter is Christopher Orwell, the executive director of the New Mexico Museum of Space History. Christopher, tell us about Carpenter's life path to NASA.
Yeah, long history with him. He was born back in the 1920s in Boulder, Colorado, and then he volunteers for the Navy service, specifically through one of the officer commissioning programs that existed at that time for the flight program. And so he goes through that, but the war ends as he is finishing up that program, and so he does not go into combat during World War II. Now, later, just before the Korean War, he ends up back into the Navy, going through another flight officer program. He'd gone to University of Colorado. And then, like I said, he ended up fighting during the Korean War, working with patrol craft. As NASA is created, he's going through the flight test program, and he's one of the flight test pilots. And so when they were taking a look at who the President Eisenhower and the folks that he wanted test pilots out of the military to be the astronauts. And so they started taking a look at a list of the candidates in the military who fit all of the requirements. There were height requirements, there were weight requirements, there were education requirements, and then amounts of flight time and jets, et cetera. And they culled that list down to a relatively limited number. And then they sent those folks down for medical testing and for interviews, et cetera, in D.C. and at Lovelace Clinic here in New Mexico. And in the end, Scott Carpenter is one of the seven who is chosen.
And his one flight was not without controversy, yes?
There is controversy surrounding the flight, although some of that is lost in the reality as well as the recollection, if you take a look at it. There were issues, even when you take a look at his own biography and the way he talked about it, he admitted that he did make some mistakes. He left on two of the control systems. So by the time he's getting ready for reentry and trying to back out of all of the experiments, trying to back out of everything that's operationally going on and get ready for reentry, and the problems that were coming into the spacecraft, these were relatively new spacecraft we were learning during this time frame, and it was test flight, there were problems with the system itself. So his attitude when he came in, not his personal attitude, but the spacecraft's attitude, was about 20 to 25 degrees off of what it should be. And so that set him up to overshoot the carrier by quite a bit, about 150, 160 miles. And then when you take a look at the other things that were going on with the fuel system, et cetera, that all total put him well over 200 miles away from the aircraft carrier when he landed. And so there was conjecture that he had made the mistakes, that the spacecraft had problems, and pretty much these days, everybody's got their opinion as to what the real problem was, ground control, the equipment, or the astronaut.
And indeed, that was his only trip into space.
Yeah, that was. That was the one and only time he flew. He ended up going back with the Navy in the Sea Lab program and came back to work with the space program, but really almost as a consultant for their operations when they were learning how to do spacewalks, EVAs, and so they were doing underwater training in the Neutral Buoyancy Lab, and so he advised the Navy on that. But that was his one and only flight, was that Aurora 7 mission.
Any other reflections on Scott Carpenter?
I did have the privilege on a couple of occasions of working with Scott on events and things like that. He was a consummate gentleman. Every time I ever interacted with him or watched him interact with anybody that he was talking with, that he was being interviewed by, that he was just in those situations where he was on display, shall we say, he was always such an incredible gentleman. And so here you have, I think, one of the true heroes in American history, and he definitely knew that he was cast into that role somewhat by choice, somewhat by the fate of history, but he continued to be that hero and to be a gentleman while doing it during his entire life.
Christopher Allwarl of the New Mexico Museum of Space History. Many thanks for joining us today. The Museum of Space History is located in Alamogordo. It has a number of exhibits on the history of the space program here in New Mexico as well as nationally. More information is available on their website, nmspacemuseum.org.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM, putting more resources into renewable energy. PNM has built 5 new solar plants since 2011 and is building 2 new solar centers this year. PNM now produces enough solar to power over 13,000 homes and enough wind to power 94,000 homes. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook, or visit PNM online at pnm.com.
31 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. KSFR's Joe Day joins us now to bring us a feature on the Santa Fe County Fire Department and its volunteers. Joe paid a visit to the Turquoise Trail Volunteer Fire Station on Highway 14 and spoke with its chief and some of the other folks there engaged in public safety. Here's Joe's report.
I'm Joe Day at the Turquoise Trail Volunteer Fire Department open house. And what you're hearing is a bunch of young boys spraying water into a tank. They seem to be loving it. I came here to find a little bit about the Santa Fe County Fire Department and specifically the role of volunteers in that department. Outside the fire station, which is on Highway 14, south of the penitentiary and north of Cerrillos and Madrid, there were 9 pieces of shiny fire apparatus. Inside, people were treating themselves to a buffet lunch. I'm here with Kevin Barrows. He's the chief of the Turquoise Trail Volunteer Fire Department. Chief, how many volunteers do you have working with you at this department?
Well, we have about 15 to 20 at this time.
Is that enough?
It isn't usually. We could use more, so there's more people available when a call comes. Some people might be busy or something.
Is there any pay for a volunteer firefighter?
At this time, if you're a licensed EMT or a licensed firefighter, you can get $10 per call.
And how many calls, say, in a week, does this particular fire district get?
We get approximately 300 to 400 a year, so depends upon how many come in.
Are most of those calls health-related or fire-related?
Most of them are EMS-related, ambulance-type calls, not as many fire calls.
But you can always use more volunteers.
Yes, people come and go. You know, people learn the trade, so to speak, and then they move on or they just have other things going on in their life. So it's good to have new people.
How are you connected to the fire department?
I'm training to be a firefighter. Right now I'm just a wildland firefighter, but after I finish school, like going for my degree, I think maybe I'll have time for to actually go in like as an internal firefighter. So
where do you go to school?
Community college.
What's your name?
Candace.
What is your name?
Jamie Escobel.
And Jamie, you're part of the Turquoise Trail Volunteer Fire Department?
Yes, sir. Volunteers help out the community is always a great help.
Is that why you do it?
I do this for that. For that, and for hopefully one day I could get onto a full-time firefighter position.
Some facts. Santa Fe County covers about 2,000 square miles. Within that, the city of Santa Fe covers about 37 square miles, and there's about 3 square miles in Española, which are covered by their local fire departments. Thus, the Santa Fe County Fire Department covers nearly 1,900 square miles. The Turquoise Trail District is one of 14 throughout the county. The number of people covered by the county fire department is over 70,000, roughly equal to the people covered in the city of Santa Fe and the small part of Española, which is in the county, covered by their departments.
I'm here with Martin V. Hill. He is one of the assistant chiefs of the Santa Fe County Fire Department. What is the importance of the volunteer force within the department?
Well, Santa Fe County Fire Department is a combination department. We have approximately 75 paid staff and over 300 volunteers that help us cover 2,000 square miles of Santa Fe County. So our volunteer ranks are critical to be able to cover that much territory. They also are very knowledgeable about their response districts. They live in their communities, and so they know a lot of their neighbors that are potentially our customers, unfortunately. They know their territory.
I would assume that in a lot of Santa Fe County, there are no fire hydrants.
That is correct. We're definitely rural, and so our department has grown up with that fact, and we have the need to bring our own water, and so we have a lot of mobile, what we call tenders, that are basically water trucks. We do what is called automatic aid. If we have a large fire in anybody's district, we automatically send four fire districts, including our paid staff. And most people will be bringing at least one water tender with them.
What is your name, please?
My name is Laird Grazer.
Laird, you are a volunteer firefighter here. From what I've learned so far, it would seem to me that really the volunteer force is the backbone of this fire department.
Absolutely. I think from the Chief Sperling on down, everyone of the paid staff will tell you that they cannot run the department without the volunteers.
How is the department funded, basically?
There are a number of funding streams. For the operating expenses, we get a grant every year from the Public Regulation Commission, the state fire marshal, and that comes from basically a little piece of the property insurance premiums that you pay. So a portion of that comes back for firefighting and other property protection. There also are grants for medical services. There's also a quarter-cent gross receipts tax that the voters approved for capital equipment. And there's some direct billing and some impact fees, and it's a very complicated source of funding.
But basically, the people who the property owners and other people are paying for this service.
Yes.
How long, on average, do people have to wait once a call is made? Let's face it, we're in a rural area. These firefighters are serving a rural area. There's no fire department around the corner unless you happen to live next to one. And even then, many of them are not fully staffed. So how long what's the wait time?
At best, we figure maybe 8 to 10 minutes response time, ranging up to an hour and a half. I've been on a call that was on one of our worst roads in the district, and it took us a full hour and a half to get to the scene of that particular incident. Anybody who does live out here does understand where the fire station is, where we respond to.
What is your name, please?
Kiana Bustios.
Kiana, you are a firefighter.
Yes, I'm actually the lieutenant here.
At the Turquoise Trail?
Yes.
How long have you been doing that?
About 2 years now.
Why did you decide to become involved in this?
I always saw my boyfriend, because he's the captain here. I would go with him on calls, like I would wait in the car and all that, and I got like really excited and wanted to do it.
What is it that you like?
The firefighting, like just helping a lot of people, helping people.
Clinton Anderson is the assistant district chief in Madrid, farther south on Highway 14. Why do you do this?
Community service, and it's, you know, better to fight fires than, you know, fight people. It's a good way of letting out aggressive impulses without hurting people and helping people. It's much better to help people than to hurt them.
At the Turquoise Trail Volunteer Fire Department, for KSFR News, this is Joe Day reporting.
It is 12:39 here in the KSFR Newsroom, well past the time when we should stop in and visit with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen, for 60 seconds.
One of my most favorite books, you know, books, words printed on paper and bound between covers, it's the Oxford Dictionary of Quotations. I can sit down with it and randomly page through it, reading different quotes, and all of a sudden, I realize an hour has passed. The Oxford Dictionary of Quotations is arranged alphabetically by author, from Peter Abelard, who died about 900 years ago, to Emile Zola, who died about 110 years ago and pronounced his name much better than I just did. But in the index, you can also look up quotes by subject, from the letter A to the German word Zweck, or Zweck. I don't know what it means. It does sound like something that happens when you cough. I apologize for Zwecking. Well, most of the people quoted are dead. They do share one common denominator. They were, or are, all smarter than I am. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Charles Maynard, Joe Day, and Tom Trowbridge. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you, and as always, we hope you join us. By the way, all of us here at KSFR are both thankful for and humbly gratified by your generous contributions to KSFR during the fall fund drive.